Eu acho que
watching Flashback Friday with Henrik and Lana, streaming live every Friday.
Spread the truth. Document it. Prove it. Make it irrefutable, and you too will become dangerous to those who admire us in lies and enslave us.
Globalism.
But because they are lying, it's possible to expose them. And this is their Achilles heel. By comparison, we have nothing to hide, therefore we have no reason to lie. And we wouldn't want to, even if we could. Truth is a far superior weapon than deceit. It's a weapon which is denied to them. And in the end, it will be the decisive weapon that destroys them completely.
Fucking day!
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Henrik, Red Ice TV. Thank you for tuning in. Another Friday is upon us. Hope you're all doing well out there. Great to be back with you, boys and girls in the audience. If you missed the show yesterday with Thomas Rousseau from Patriot Front Live in studio here, definitely check that out. I got to get it up on a couple of places still. We had a late dinner with Thomas and some of the Patriot Front boys here as well. I saw one complaint. It's like, you didn't notify us anywhere about it. I did in the morning. But, you know, last time they were in Coeur d'Alene, you know, it wasn't the greatest experience. I kind of wanted to avoid some, you never know, right? So I was like, okay, let's not promote it until the same day, at least if someone plans something, you know, nothing will go wrong. But anyway, check it out. It's going up on, you know, redicemembers.com and Telegram and a couple other places a little bit after this show. But today, boys and girls, we're going to focus a little bit on some of the recent, just yet again, shootings in Sweden. Of course, bombs going off continuously, losing control when it comes to, you know, the state's monopoly on violence in Sweden while they're cracking down hard on, let's take some examples. An old lady selling cinnamon buns on Facebook. We'll talk about that story. We're going to talk about Germany, too, a potential new, you know, terrorist attack in Stuttgart. Possibly, we don't have all the details yet, but, you know, that wouldn't be surprising considering the track record. And a little bit later, we have to talk about this, how do we put it, the mom who had enough, the fed-up mom over, I think this was in Minnesota, if I read the state correctly. She said some naughty words, so now the anti-whites are coming after her. Silo Hendricks, I think her name was. But the support, the backing has been tremendous That's some of the stuff we're going to get into today. But we have two great guests with us here. It's going to help be a guest host this Flashback Friday over from my stomping grounds, Sweden. We have Dan Eriksson and Magnus Söderman with us. Boys, say hello. Good to see you.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening. Nice to be back here.
Indeed. How are you guys doing? Good to see you. Was it a while ago?
Yeah, it was. I don't remember when I was here last, but it's been a while. But it's nice to be back looking in and talking a bit about what's happening over here and over there. So looking forward to it.
Cool. I know it's late over there too, boys. I know we have plenty of coffee lined up because it's just turned, 11:17 over there right now. So appreciate you guys staying up as well for us.
Yeah, but I mean, what better things can you do a Friday evening than talk to you, Henrik, and talk to the nice audience of Red Ice?
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you, boys. So appreciate it. How's things going with? Obviously, you guys are from the you're involved in many projects over in Sweden, but the Free Sweden, the association over there. Obviously, you still have a large presence doing media production and all kinds of things. Give us a little update. How things are going?
Well, it's been I think it was like 2 years ago we were last on your show, so a lot has happened since then. We opened our second house. That's one of the main things we do in our project, is that we establish these House of the Swedes, which are meeting points and you know, open places for people to come and meet nationalists and take part in events and so on. So we opened our second house. That house got attacked and the main building was burnt down in a terrorist attack from Antifa. And it's been a lot of work with rebuilding and, you know, cleaning it up and so on. But at the same time, we have, you know, focused a lot on our online presence as well. So we have both of these legs. So
Is the house that rebuilt?
Hasn't stopped us at all. No, but we have cleaned it up and instead focused on the second building in the same place.
All right, nice. I'll pull up some websites and stuff here later on too. But I wanted to start. Why don't we talk about what happened in Uppsala, Sweden? And I don't have all the details yet. And it's like two. It's almost hard to just keep up with all the shootings now. I mean, bombings is one thing, and I'm laughing, but it's just so absurd when you're considering everything and how far it's gone. I think I saw some statistics that Sweden, I'm not sure if it's true, but it was like higher crime rates in Sweden now than El Salvador. Obviously, he's cleaned up quite a bit, so maybe, you know, they surpassed each other at some point. Bukele, obviously, in El Salvador with these prisons they're opening up and everything. A lot of people, illegals from the U.S. is being sent there and things like this, gang members. But, I mean, it's just, I'm just looking at this. I'm just like, yeah, I'm not surprised, and it will not stop anytime soon. This will just continue, and this is the new norm now. In Sweden, basically, boys.
Well, I think first you have to understand that the Swedish society is built for a very homogenous, high-trust society. So everything, you know, how the police works, how the laws are made and so on, are made for a totally different society. So since Sweden became multicultural and we now have like one-third of the people in Sweden are foreigners of some sort, maybe around 20-25% non-Europeans, things have changed rapidly. And what we see now in Sweden develop the last 10 years is, you know, a gang and clan conflict taking place on the Swedish streets. And the Swedish police and the Swedish politicians, they are not ready to handle this. They don't really have the tools to handle this, because all our tools were made for a Swedish high trust society, and now everything is changing really, really fast. So of course it's a terrible situation, and this last triple murder was something. It was not new, but it's quite rare that it happens in the middle of one of the biggest cities in Sweden, in Uppsala, in the middle of the day. So it was like 5 p.m. It was also, you know, it was bright outside and so on. Usually these are things that happens in the suburbs in the middle of the night. But this was different. And I think many Swedes are getting used to it, and that's it's the worst part.
New achievement unlocked, I guess. Cling! Goddamn video game. What do we know about the perps and victims yet? Is this an internal migrant feud, as so many of them are? I mean, occasionally, of course, Swedes get kind of caught in the crossfire, really, many times. And, you know, especially when bombs and shit like this goes off, we've seen Swedes being injured and killed as a consequence of this gang warfare, basically.
Yeah, and more Swedes are joining these gangs as well, because this culture, you know, with like gangster hip hop and so on, this is promoted in state media, and this lifestyle is promoted as, you know, dangerous and a bit exciting. So you can see more Swedes going into these gangs as well. Of course, they are a small minority in the gangs, but you can see more and more of them at least, which is disturbing. But what we know so far. This happened in a barbershop that is run by Eritreans. The victims were like between 15 and 20 years old. And first they arrested a 16-year-old of a Somali. But he has now been released, and instead they have taken four other guys into custody. We don't know the identities of them yet, but it's surely some sort of Middle Eastern, African, whatever.
A little feud.
People.
it seems like, with the latest information coming, also it seems like at least one of the guys getting shot didn't have anything to do with the gangs or organized crime in that sense. They don't think so anyway. Maybe he knew someone who knew someone. But if you go to a school in one of these areas in Sweden, you know someone who is involved in something. You know, that's how it works. So at least one of them were like innocent in that sense. And this is not the first time either that is happening. You know, we have had a couple of shootings just in the latest where it was one guy coming home from the gym. He was like 17 years old who was shot. We don't really know why, but he was shot of one of these. They think gang members or something like that. And as you said, with the explosions and the bombings, you have had some elderly people, a dog was injured and had to be put to rest. And so this is, as we said before, this will, I mean, for many years, we have talked about this, we have warned about this, and we have said that this will spill over and people will be caught in the crossfire. And now this is happening. And the thing is that, as Dan was talking about, people are getting used to that also.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, in the 80s and the 90s, I remember when we had some, you know, knife violence, skinheads and rockers and bikers and you know, whatever, who was fighting in the subways and so on. And we had these giant demonstrations. And we had this anti-violence from the state and the police and all the different government bureaus and so on. And people were having big demonstrations in Stockholm, you know, 100,000 people down with violence. And now everyone is like, yeah, this happens, you know, it happens. I mean, we had this guy, Mikael, shot in the head, executed because he told some of these young gang members to stop messing around, so they shot him in the face. And 2 weeks later, more or less everyone has forgotten about it. So something is broken in the mind of the people.
Yeah,
this is really what it's all about. And the last thing is also, as Dan said, Swedish society is not capable to handle children who are extremely violent. This is something totally new. If you put weapons in the hands of children, what will happen? This will happen. They don't have any they don't have any consequence, you know, thinking about what's happening. So it's really a downward slope in that sense. But still, you can live your whole life here, having a good time, never having to worry about anything. So it's people's bubbles, as you say, are also very...
But the bleed over, as you're talking about now, it's like it's You might be shot. You might be caught up in one of these little gang warfare things, as you said about the recruitment too, right? Obviously, this is because of the what's the term I'm looking for? When you're officially, you know, become an adult, 18, obviously.
Yeah.
So the recruiting down in fifth, even younger now, right? Like 12, 11. 13, 11, exactly. And that's so the other gangs turn to these youths I've heard stories of them obviously threatening them, but also bribing them and giving them things. Yeah. And, you know, you go and do this and take care of that. And exactly, it's like high trust, safe society for decades and decades, too safe, obviously, too comfortable, too safe. And then now we're caught off guard. We're importing these people from the third world, criminal minded, and they turn to this immediately. And they're attracted to it, and now they're starting recruitment of younger and younger people. And meanwhile, as they're kind of like basically like giving up, right? There was one, I think it was a paper here from Lund University that lost controls the Swedish PM as immigrant gangs take over Sweden. And it seems on the flip side of the increased violence, they're going after the Swedish people even harder with the most ridiculous rules and laws. And they're going, you know, they're going after them for like having a knife in the back of their trunk when they're going hunting. Or as I said before, we'll talk about the cinnamon roll, the bread baking lady who sold some of these on Facebook, apparently. But it's just so absurd, which shows you that two-tier society that is like you're kind of getting an authoritarian system in place as they're ignoring the most violent, extreme, crazy, out of control violence by these gangs.
I wouldn't say that they are ignoring them, but they don't know how to handle them. And it's also like the Swedish state and the police, they have no leads, no way into these parallel societies. Because what has happened in Sweden over 40 years something now is that all around the big cities in the suburbs, you know, in America, often when you say suburbs, you see like these nice houses where all have some, you know, the lawns looks the same and so on. But suburbs in Sweden usually are like our projects. You know,
exactly, they are, yeah. The Section 8 housing, the high rises. These were built for Swedes originally, like the Million Program and stuff like that, the big shoebox, concrete boxes. But now they're just, there's like a breeding ground for migrants, a hive. it's like a beehive for migrants.
And these areas are full on parallel societies with parallel justice systems, with, you know, nothing. They have nothing to do with mainstream Sweden. And that means also that Swedish police has almost no way to get into these societies and, you know, get information. And there are clans controlling some of these areas. And they're even, you know, controlling who comes in and goes out of these areas sometimes, putting up roadblocks. So they have totally... That's when you talk about losing control. So how can you control like these areas when they are parallel societies? It's like having an occupier inside your own country who has built a big base inside and have thousands of people living around it. You cannot control it. The only way is to defeat the occupier and hunt them out.
Yeah.
But no politician is ready to talk about that yet.
No, definitely not. Yeah, I mean, these are, you know, colonies, essentially, and no-go zones, as people have heard that term, obviously, where they, you know, if you do have fire department, ambulances, or even police coming into some of these areas, yeah, they stand up for their, this is ours. I mean, we played clips with them talking like that. We're taking care of business this here, also, this is ours, you know.
You know, Sweden is a very segregated country, which is a good thing because that means that, you know, we don't want to live in mixed areas. But it also means that most Swedes, you know, middle-class Swedes, they don't have to experience multiculturalism every day. The problem is that a nice upper-middle-class area can be, you know, there can be like a train track or just a motorway between that and the migrant ghetto. So, of course, after a while, the migrants come over to your side and start selling drugs to your kids and try to recruit your kids and so on. So this can't go on forever. But just as you have these parallel societies from the non-Swedes, you also have these bubbles and segregated areas with Swedes. And it's not only like the upper class. I would say most of middle class is, you know, can live quite segregated if they want to.
Yeah.
But as we were talking about this, that it's built over, and what we have seen also is that many of the more, you know, leading persons in these gangs, some of them are moving into areas where it's more or less white middle class because they have the money now and so on. We had the murder of a famous rap artist, or what you call them, in Hammarby Sjöstad, nice area in the middle of Stockholm. I mean, this is happening more and more in these areas also, of course, because they are moving when they have the money. And as we said also, now we see that Swedish youths are also joining these gangs, and they are getting multicultural in that sense more than before. We had an example for a couple of months ago or a year ago, something like that. It was a young white guy who used marijuana, you say it? Yes. And he had some diagnosis and so on, you know, and his dealers asked him to do a job for them, shoot someone, you know, and he was with the in the telephone, he was walking in, they talked to him and said, go there and do this, and so. And it all ended up
like shoot anyone.
Yeah, shoot anyone. That was the last thing. Shoot anyone. Shoot anyone who looks like a gangster, like a criminal. Shoot some of the shoot immigrant. It's no problem because you're a Swede, so no one will believe it was you. And he shot this immigrant, and the other one were laughing in the phone. So they don't care. I mean, this is it's more of just total nihilistic. Sometimes it's more totally nihilistic, you know, anti-human, anti-life, sadistic psychopaths, and not so much anything else. They don't really care about anything, you know. And this is the new thing. And they recruit white guys, of course, because if you're white, if you're a Swede, you can walk around. The police won't stop you as much, and so on and so forth, of course. Also, the police and the government is going against hunters and old ladies selling cinnamon buns. But you can still, I mean, if I walk around with a Gucci cap on my head, well, I would never do that. But if I did, the police wouldn't stop me. But if I'm an immigrant, they would probably stop me, because this is how it works, of course. So they are recruiting white guys, and I mean, the state public service radio is playing this hip hop shit. Gangster rap that we.
It's like the same kind of American trajectory, really, right? Just promoting that gang culture and, you know, the music and the music videos and all that. Of course, it's online now, but still, yeah, that's what they do. And then you have, I wanted to talk about this a little bit too. We have a famous criminologist, I think you call him, right? Leif G.W. G.W. Persson, who actually was fired. I'm trying to translate this piece here, see if we can do that. He was fired from Swedish public television. But, and you guys might have more details. I think, Don, you sent me a video even what he exactly said. But like, as you have slightly kind of within the establishment still and the media world try to bring some attention to the link between ethnicity and crime, immediately you're just kicked out. Did you guys see this story? Did you follow it?
Yeah. And to understand, you know, Leif G.W. Persson, he's a rock star. If you can be a rock star in criminology, he is a rock star.
Yeah, I remember like decades and decades, this guy, we've seen him. Yeah.
He's very, very famous in Sweden. Also, you know, he's also an author who writes crime, fiction crime, and so on. But, you know, he's been the go-to expert for decades. And he's really beloved among the people and so on. He has a very particular style. He's very slowly speaking and so on. But, you know, he's on point most of the time. And he has a weekly show where he's the expert, and there's some kind of lady asking him questions, talking about, you know, the week that has passed and, you know, crime and so on, and tries to give a bigger picture. And so just a few weeks ago, he said that we have, you know, what we don't talk so much about is genetics and ethnicity, which is usually a much stronger factor than social factors. And this is, of course, very controversial in the mainstream media. But, I mean, he's a professor. He has studied this for 50 years. And he's, of course, right. I mean, we know that this is right. But this was too much. And now they canceled his show. And, I mean, he is a multimillionaire. He'll survive this.
Yeah. Yeah, he had it on Channel 4, TV4 initially, right? But then they scrapped that. He went over to Swedish public television. And I'm not sure if they said, oh, it's not, no, it wasn't related to those comments, but obviously it was kind of thing. We can play the clip you sent here, Don. We'll check out what he actually said here.
Det finns en som han har undvikit kraftigt, eller två snarare. Det ena är det genetiska sambandet som är starkare än de sociala sambanden faktiskt.
Vad menar du då?
Ja, alltså hur är det ställt med genetiken om man spårar den här unga brottslingen bakåt och hans släkt, va?
Mm.
Det är det ena. Det andra är den etniska faktorn. De har man undvikit dem.
Ja, men genetiken, då menar du att man har liksom olika diagnoser och olika problem?
Ja, man har det här i detalj, så att
säga. Nice save, lady. That's not going to work.
Man har fått ta över för en genetiska problem. Det är starkare samband än de flesta sociala samband, och det pratar man ogärna om. Sambandet som är mycket starkt nu när det kommer till den här, vad ska vi kalla för, grova organiserade brottsligheten i marginaliserade förorter bland med då unga aktörer.
Magnus, jump in there.
it's very interesting, and I at first I was a little bit like shocked when I heard him saying this, because I mean, he's not if you look at his track record, he's always been quite, you know, just saying it like he sees it, but he's also social democrat, he's a party member, and he's very, you know, he believes also in multiculturalism and so on. So, I mean, so I was a little bit shocked at first, but then I remembered that actually social democrats in the 40s and the 50s, they understood these things. And we had Rasbiologisk Institutet, biology.
The racial biology department.
Yeah, late into the 1955-60s, you know. And we had also sterilizations in Sweden quite late, when we looked at people who were, and we understood the fact that he's saying that criminals, there is a criminal gene in many cases, and they sterilized a lot of people. And now, after 68, and you know, the new ideas coming, people are saying like, "Oh, this was bad to do." But if they hadn't done it, God knows where Sweden would have been today. And now, so we got rid of a lot of bad genetics, a lot of bad criminal genetics. That's because. And then we saw that during the 70s and 80s, we had a couple of criminals. Everybody knew these criminals by name. We had 5 or 10 criminals, and everyone knew that these were like the worst criminals in Sweden. And they almost got some iconic status, you know, Clark Olofsson, and we have Christer Pettersson and some other guys, you know. And everybody knew that if something really bad happened, it was these guys. So that's because the most of the other ones were never born. And then we started in the 70s and 80s, we started to import people from, some would say, areas where low IQ, or maybe, you know, not the best
marriage. Stock.
Some would say that. I don't know if they are right or wrong. Some would say that, you know, and it would be illegal to say that it is.
Are you afraid to join the old lady making the cinnamon buns?
Yes, I'm going on there, cinnamon buns on red ice.
That's true. You gentlemen have to watch what you say. So I totally understand. Don't worry about it.
You know, you have this nice thing called freedom of speech in the US.
They're working on that. Yeah.
It was very good he said this. I think this will open up a new debate.
Yeah, because it's just like we made it safe, and I mean this goes back, I think, centuries, where they're like, any even slight criminality, they basically, Swedes have been bred to be you know, compliant, essentially law abiding and compliant for centuries. And obviously now then in the on our, you know, ironically, perhaps if we had some more, how do I put this? I don't know if this is true across the board. It's not that you want to have a society filled with criminals, but it's true, I think, to a certain extent as well, that you do have a little bit more rebellious fighting spirit in some of those people too, right? So I'm not saying we're, you know, incapable of fighting back, but I'm saying it was like we were bred for that. And as long as you had a homogeneous society, perfect. That, you know, it became a country admired around the world for its safety and, you know, security and education, all these things. But then when you, you know, counter that, oh, we're so safe now, let's bring in these people and quote unquote help them, you know, because we are able to deal with this and capable of dealing with this. And as you guys have said for decades, as we have said, this is going to turn into a total shit show. And it's going to just expand further and further. And yeah, here we are, basically.
What if you, I would say we are still only seeing the prologue. So
I think you're right. Yeah.
But if you look at the history of the Europe, you will see that, and especially maybe in the Nordic countries, I don't know, but what you have is a very, very high use of death penalty. I mean, we killed people. We killed people for nearly nothing sometimes.
Yeah.
And this actually made Europe quite safe in that sense. Of course, we have had that rebel spirit. You know, we talk about the farmer uprising in Germany, and we have Wilhelm Tell, and we have a lot of these things happening. But when it comes to this kind of criminality, we have been purged it in many ways, but then we had in the 50s and 60s also it came this cultural, almost a cultural revolution from America. We had the rock music, and we had the rebel without a cause. We had the free bikers and everything coming pouring over, this rebel spirit, you know. And I don't know if that was such a good idea in some cases.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we got a couple of examples here. We can rattle some of these off here. Let me go over to this angle here, and show just the insanity on the other side. As I said, there might be, you know, it doesn't mean they're not, you know, trying to deal with the criminal element, as you said, but they're just incapable of doing it. They don't know how to. They've asked help from the military, at least in terms of sharing intelligence, information, and things like this. But you can see this like trajectory where then Sweden, as all multicultural, multiracial societies do, they must become authoritarian in order to kind of patch this together. Long term, I don't even think that is going to work. But short term, that's the obvious kind of thing that they're doing. I mean, Sweden was this famous clip with Alex Karp from Palantir, where he shared information on Swedish public television with an interview there, I forget what his name was, where he's talking about how their products, their AI predictive products, are able to prevent terrorist attacks in Sweden and other European countries. He was very proud of this. And why? Well, because it can keep the right-wing parties from coming to power in European countries. And so it's just like, so you can only, you know, you want to live with people, they want to kill you and bomb you, and but we will use AI and predict, you know, pre-crime type technology to try to solve it and keep this goddamn, you know, blob together, which shows you just how insane it is. But here's a couple of quick ones here then. Grandmother baked buns, you know, cinnamon rolls, bread and stuff like that. She was selling it on Facebook, and she's been now sentenced to 6 weeks in prison because she basically didn't register with the government. She didn't obtain the necessary, you know, kind of paperwork and stuff like that. That's just one. And let me see if I can do these quick here. Let me translate these or bring them over to English. She brought home food, waste food or leftover foods for her pigs. And she was fired from her job. Here's another one in terms of, like, I see stories like this all the time of, like, homeowners and people out in the countryside. They get approached by local government in many cases, very stiff regulation. This one is regarding the plumbing or the sewer system. You basically have to, like, comply to all these insane rules and laws, and the costs keep going up for these things. Here are some of those I mentioned before. Regarding the knife, on the way home from the hunt, this person was reported for violation of the Knife Act. Same thing here. My brother sent some of these to me, so thanks, Verdict, if you're watching. Here's another one, if I can get this translated. Basically, Hunter was prosecuted, or he escaped prosecution narrowly after he had transported a hunting knife in his car. So you see this, like, well, we got to crack down on crime. It's kind of like England, I guess, right? They have the same thing. We're going to ban samurai swords. We're going to ban any sharp object because knife, crime is out of control, essentially. What do you guys think when you see stupid stuff like this?
Well, it's this, of course, some sort of two-tier system. It's anarcho-tyranny and so on. And Sweden, it's a lot of bureaucracy, and especially when it comes to... I have a friend, he is building a house right now, and more than 30% of his costs are just bureaucracy. So... he's paid for the land, he has paid for the material and for the work, but 30% of the costs is just, taxes and, filling out forms and hiring lawyers. And, it's crazy in many ways. On the other hand, I mean, these hunters, that's really weird. When it comes to this grandmother baking the buns, she was sentenced in a lower court, and she was ordered to stop doing this because she didn't comply with the rules. She had to register with the food safety department. And if she continued her, her business without registering, she would get a fine of like $500 per week. And she continued anyway because she's a rebel.
I'm with the grandma. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. But I just tried to give some context.
No, I know.
Over a year's time, and now in a higher court, she got sentenced to prison because they looked how much she owned the state, and they translated that into 6 weeks of prison time.
Yeah.
And there were also some other stuff connected with that. But the thing that we are, because these trials cost tens of thousands of dollars.
Of course.
We don't have any more capacity in our prisons. We are now having two or three inmates in every cell. We used to have only one. There's a waiting line for the Swedish prisons. So many people, they get sentenced to prison and then they have to wait a year before they can get in because it's such a popular place. And now we're going to send a grandma to prison. It is hard to understand. In one way, you can say, laws are laws and they should be followed and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes
there's Swedish compliance coming in here. No, we got
no, but I think one thing is like maybe remember the quote something like that the vision for the future or the vision of tyranny, it's a boot stamping on a human face forever. It's George Orwell saying that. Yeah, he was wrong. It's not the future and it's not tyranny. I mean, that would be a bliss because then you would know that you are oppressed. We live in tyranny is a faceless bureaucracy stamping papers, doing all these things forever. Nobody is responsible for anything.
Yes,
and all these things. This is tyranny, and this is not the future. This is our society. But as Dawn said, Grandma got what she was looking for because she was breaking the rules. No, but the thing is that we have also our society. Made these rules a part of our society towards civilization, because somewhere we understood that if we just let people do anything, everyone can bake cinnamon buns at home, someone will do it in their dirty old ass kitchen, and everyone will die and get diseases. And you will have some other idiot, not knowing how to do it, will have caustic soda in it or something, and people will die again and so on and so forth. And we had the plague. We had a lot of bad things happening. People in Sweden were not living that good in the beginning of the 1900s, in the cities and so on. So we had a society, a state coming in saying, okay, we have to help people here. And then Sweden have been quite a good country. We have had... people have been living quite nice. And I know that Don will soon jump in and totally destroy the welfare state and everything. But
sorry to cut you off on this, but you know, you can say what you want about it. And of course, I think the end result of that has been a net negative. But at the time, it was a positive. You genuinely had a leadership that were looking out for the people. It was it was socialism, but it was more national. It was national socialism to a certain extent, right? And that obviously became very unpopular over time, and slowly, you know, it liberalized and all that stuff. But it was I think even though it was a little bit this kind of top down, as they say in America, this mommy and daddy type of, you know, government or whatever, holding you in the hand all along the way, which I think ultimately created a sense of, you know, weakness or kind of decapacitated people or made them too compliant, right? But it was, I think it was from a good, you know, the folk home, folkhemmet, right? These concept that they had at the time. I think that genuinely came from a good place, from the people doing it at the time. That's what I want to say.
But I must ask, because I have seen, because I mean, the U.S. it's no socialist state and so on. I've heard about that.
Yeah.
But I have also read about, you know, it's illegal to like have your rainwater
in certain certain states like Colorado. They were like collecting fees for someone who were there were fees for someone collecting rainwater like outside of their house.
Okay, so you had to go to, but that is not socialist state, but that's like, I mean,
no,
so
we had this,
they were throwing away butter and they were throwing away milk and everything. I mean, this is the end of maybe it's the end of civilization in a sense, you know. Where this bureaucracy is just a monster. I remember Pastor Miles wrote about this, that he said that it was the mass man. I mean, this is the epitome of the mass man. No one is responsible. No one is... everyone is doing these things and complying, and no one is responsible in the end because everyone can just blame someone else. And I remember, I remember when we had this... it was in Thailand for 10, 15, 20 years ago, this big tsunami. And a lot of Swedes were killed in this catastrophe.
Yeah, and I knew one girl. I went to the same class as her. She perished in that. Yeah, I remember. It's 2004.
And it was so sad, everything. And, you know, the Swedish Foreign Department were slow in acting, and everybody was like doing these afterwards, you know, they were talking about why did Sweden act so slow, and it ended up with putting the blame on a phone answering machine somewhere in a department, because it didn't work, or you know, it's so crazy. And this is the epitome of mass man, and this is the tyranny we are facing, and this is... And then grandma goes to prison.
Yeah, it's just paper. It's just paperwork at the end of the day. As you said, it's bureaucracy, paperwork, slowly choking you out. Oh my gosh, I can't stand it.
I mean, we are running an organization, and you know, I'm the main administrator.
Yeah.
And I would say that 20% of my time is just, you know, bureaucracy that has to do with the state and admin and so on, and not the fun admin, like, you know, IT development or something like that, you know, just complying with stuff. And especially when you have events, but don't get me started on if you want to serve alcohol in Sweden, then it's harder to get a license to serve alcohol than it is to, I don't know, get a ticket on a spaceship. It's almost impossible. And we have had so many meetings with authorities, and, you know, like, you leave the meeting or hang up the phone, and we just look at each other and like, no, is it this bad? And, you know, you get shocked every time at how complicated stuff can get, just because you want to bring 200 people together for a gathering.
Yeah.
If you want to comply with the rules. And our idea was, let's not make it easy for our enemies to put us in prison or
legally
ban us. And stuff. We comply with everything. We do it the way that they told us it should be done. But then now we are realizing that the only, you know, other organizations that are not nationalists, they get a lot of funding from the state. So they can hire someone who just do all the admin.
Yeah.
We are not allowed to get any funding from the state because we have the wrong opinions, which means that we have to do it, you know, take our membership fees to pay somebody to do it or do it ourselves.
Yikes. Couple of super chats here I'm going to clear off before we move on here. Albert, good to see you. Hope you're doing well. It says, happy Friday, guys. Awesome show yesterday with Thomas Rousseau. I really enjoyed the discussion. Also, great Western Warrior this week as well. Looking forward to another great show today. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Albert. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for that big donation. We appreciate you as always. Thank you so much, Albert. Based Kayubi, I think it is, says, what do you think of the more high-functioning Iranian community? I guess in Sweden, maybe? That's what they're thinking? I was shocked at the no of politicians in the Swedish Riksdag, straight up born in Iran, similar to the Anglosphere Indian problem, question mark, someone says. Do you guys know much about that, the Iranian community in Sweden?
Well, the Iranian immigration to Sweden is very different from the Arabic one because it has been a mostly upper middle class, you know, like university students and so on. Many of them were Marxists who fled to Sweden in the 80s and 90s, and they have a culture that, which you can some way compare to the Indians in Britain, you know, like this culture of high education and so on. So it is a group that has less problems than other immigrant groups in Sweden. As a nationalist, they are still a problem, of course.
Yeah.
I do not want a million Iranians in Sweden, but they are but they are not this, you know, when it comes to criminality and these kind of gangs and so on, you don't see many Iranians around there. They're mostly dentists, I guess.
that is true. I've had my experiences of that once. It was, yeah, they're more high functioning, which ironically that makes it more dangerous, right? Staying under the radar, not noticing to a certain extent. Because a lot of this takes up a lot of the, I mean, look, I don't want to go on a whole spiel here of like, oh, it's bad, or it's good that it's bad because then we notice. But it is true that the out of control, as the Swedish Prime Minister said here, does force Swedish people to address the issue of immigration in a way that they perhaps wouldn't have done if it was all a big kumbaya fest and everyone was getting along and things were generally good or whatnot. It's pushing and forcing us to organize like you gentlemen are doing and so many others as well.
It's always complicated in that sense that you need also, because it can also be, you know, pacifying people because they think it's impossible to change. You know, we've lost control.
Sure,
everything is so bad.
Yep.
Why should I do anything? Sweden is a lost cause, which it is not. And I really want to stress that because this kind of defeatism or pessimism is really, really dangerous. Yes, Sweden has a lot of problems, but Sweden is far from lost. There's still a lot of things that we can do. So
yes,
you always have to balance this somehow. Of course, you cannot ignore the big problems we have, but you should also not
be pacified by them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But another thing that is happening now, of course, and that's how it is. I'll try not to be so bitter about it, but it's how it is. Both me and Dan, we have been doing this for some time now.
Some time. It's
the most part of our lives. And, you know, it's quite frustrating, of course, to see now that the things that we said, like, when we were teenagers or so, this is getting more and more. And then we were, you know, called out as Nazis and this and that and everything. And we were like, okay, if you say so, then we will be that. Who cares? But now it's been picked up. And I mean, just like 10 years ago, things that were said and people were, you know, they were called all kind of things in the media. Is now said by politicians and the same media. So now we have this going on, and people are, as you say, they have to confront the facts that Sweden is a little bit out of control in some cases. So what will happen, or what happens? Are the Swedes now looking to me and Dan saying, please, oh, you prophets in your hometown, take the banner of freedom and lead us into a glorious victory? No, of course not. Why should they say that? because we were right and we are still right. And this means also that we are still right in about what we have to do in the future. But now we have people coming, you know, from Iran, some of them, or we have Swedish people who, for like a couple of years ago, woke up to this and smelled the coffee and are like, oh, things are not this good. And they are saying, we need a new nationalism. We need a, we must look at the US of A, because there they have this nationalism. Everyone is flying the flag, you know, and this is a functional multicultural society. So we have to have this red, white and blue flag patriotism. If everyone just can gather under the flag, this is what we have to do. And me and Don and others are like, no, you know, this is about ethnicity, it's about race. Someone say race and they're like, oh no. And so they are still following these phony false leaders. And it is what it is. I know this. And as I said, I try not to be bitter. But I know that now we will have to have like 20 years of some kind of civic nationalism. And yeah, people will be like, yeah, civic nationalism, it's the shit, just as long as people work and, you know, oh, it's so, we have money and we can do this and that and we have police and so on. Yeah, everyone can work together. So we have to have 20 years of that. I mean, we are, and then it will fall apart. And then they will like, they will like, you know, whipping the dead horse. Me and Don is lying there 80, 90 years old in some old folks home, and they're whipping us like, come on now, guys.
We're ready now. Let's do it. Let's go. Yeah, exactly.
Take the flag.
No, but it's true. Exactly. Like a fake. You see this, right? And obviously this has been very prominent within conservative, you know, movements, yeah, and like the moderate party, obviously in Sweden and things like this, that we're like, yeah, we'll just. But again, that's even worse. That's worse than actually having kind of at least temporarily an out of control society, because now we have this like, oh, see, now your daughters can marry their men and we can all get along and just, blend everything out and there'll be some happy, you know, multicultural, you know, blob cesspool of everything. But that's not going to work. That's not going to work either. And we've seen that. And then in the long term, it just will not work. We'll see. At least we have the opportunity to say, we told you so. Maybe it's worth it for that alone. No, but seriously, we obviously want to try to change the situation, and it's drastically different from what it is now. But they will try, I think you're right, Magnus, they will try to kind of pacify people, be that with some new sense of, yeah, patriotism around some bullshit, you know, corporate version, basically, of a Swedenist. They've done the same in Canada. They're doing it in America. Many other countries are kind of following that model, to be honest. But you said something before, Magnus, where you talked about the how it took a long time, right, to kind of mobilize Sweden, in this case, it was to help the tsunami victims over in Thailand. When that happened, that's decades ago now. But I saw this tweet. I want to get you guys' take on this. This is Carl Oskar Bolin, right? He's the, let me check his bio here, Swedish Minister for Civil Defense. They're ready right now. They're ready to stand up and support Israel. Apparently, they have some fires over there, and apparently they're going to send some Saab planes or something. I don't know. We have, via the Swedish Civil Contingency Agency, offered to dispatch firefighting aircrafts to Israel to combat the extensive forest fires that are currently raging. Even though the distance is far away, we are ready to provide help if needed. What is this Israel pivot? Sweden has a proud long history of kind of being very skeptical, shall we say, of the Zionist project in the Middle East. But there seems to be a pivot, not only from the Sweden Democrats, but guys like this. I'm not sure what his exact political affiliation is. Is he moderate, this guy?
Yeah, he's from the moderate party.
Yeah,
okay. So that's the center-right party. The thing is, like the Israel-Palestine question and so on, all of these questions has become a right-wing, left-wing thing. It's like a continuation of the culture war. So if the left wing is pro something, the right wing must be against it. So over the last decade, you would see a lot of right-wingers in Sweden becoming more and more pro-Israel because the left is pro-Palestine. So you're always looking at, okay, what is my political enemy doing, and I will be the contrarian to that. So it's a bit silly when it comes to the moderate party, and we have the liberal party, the Christian Democrats, who are forming the government. They have always been Zionists and very pro-Israel. So I'm not surprised at all, but it's a bit silly because Sweden is, I mean, people look at a map. Sweden is way up in the north.
Yeah.
And Israel is somewhere in the middle, and we are going to send firefighting aircraft to Israel. It makes
sense if it's put out.
Yeah, but if there's a fire in Germany or in Poland,
right,
or
in
Estonia, it makes sense. But in Israel, but I think this is just positioning on the international political arena, because right now we have a lot of pro-Palestinian demonstrations in Sweden, which are very aggressive, and they are filled with Arabs and Antifa and so on, who are very, very aggressive, and it's, you know, people are really fed up with that. Most Swedes don't care about the conflict in Israel, but many more Swedes are becoming pro-Israel because they're getting tired of these daily demonstrations and not riots, but, you know, unrest from these demonstrations. And I think what Carl-Oskar Bohlin is doing here is also positioning himself to his own voters. We are on the side of order.
We're standing up for the West, which is, you know, the heart of that is obviously Israel, as some cucked U.S.
makes total sense. Yeah. Said recently.
there is quite interesting these things, because I know that, I mean, if you're into politics and you're into geopolitics, and if you have been studying history, you have a better understanding of the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, of course. Most people haven't done this. So what I think happens is that some kind of racial memory is kicking in, the thing is that people look at Israel, and when they think about Israel, they think about some movie they have seen, or maybe the Eurovision Song Contest or something like that, or they see, you know, they see pictures from Israel with Palestinians throwing bottles and some, you know, lady IDF soldiers and so on standing there trying to you know, cover themselves or something like that. And this is the view for many people. If you're not a left-wing activist, maybe you look at it more as a racial thing. You know, you identify with the Jews, because most of them, when you look at it in the media, they look white. You know, they look white.
As Jared Taylor would say.
As Jared Taylor would say. They look white. So
you boys knocking the Jared Taylor here.
People are looking at this and they see that, okay, so people are looking at them and saying, okay, these are my, these are more like me than the Arabs. So if you don't have any other understanding of the conflict, it's not so strange that you look at Israel and think, okay, these are the good guys. Because
yeah, it's us against the Muslims, basically, right?
Yeah, when you go out in Malmö or you go out in Stockholm and you see the Muslims everywhere and you hear about Sharia and you look at Rotherham and you look at all of these places you have now in Detroit, I think, or it's somewhere in the U.S., you have whole towns now taken over by Muslims. And they were all voting on Trump also, I heard somewhere. Quite interesting. So when you see these things and then you look at white guys surrounded by Muslims in Palestine, and they are shooting at them. They are fucking going with the tanks and you know, blowing up these Arab places. Then you're like, yeah, that's the way we have to do it. And that's not so strange. That is some kind of racial misguided, but still you go on what you see. So I think that's a part of the explanation. So if you then try to come from our position, like, oh, okay, listen to this. The Jewish question has been around since, you know, the Egyptians were going into the land of... And people are like, yeah, okay. You know, So, oh yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah, you have. Well, let me counter that then. We could play this clip. I'm not sure if you've seen it yet, but it's. I just call it a new Barbara Spector type clip, right? Because we have the Paideia organization, yeah. Swedish taxpayer money.
I saw that
money.
One. I saw this one.
Yeah, see this one? Interesting, right? So this is Dan Cheftan, I think you pronounce it, chairman of the National Security Studies Center at the University of Haifa, Israel. He's a senior lecturer at Haifa University School of Political Sciences. He's taught at the Israeli Defense Forces National Security College and the IDF's, the Israeli Defense Forces Command and Staff College. Here he is talking about his revenge on Sweden. And the, so obviously, again, the Palestine-Israel question. Let's play it for the audience that haven't seen this yet.
My revenge on Sweden is Malmö. You know, this is a place where people can't live anymore, and it's a very major problem, and they really deserve it. We only have two enemies in Europe at the moment, and this is Sweden and Ireland. My revenge on Sweden is Malmö. We have at least 8-9 nations who are very friendly to Israel. Most European nations are fair-minded, even if critical. We only have two enemies in Europe at the moment, and this is Sweden and Ireland.
Because they recognize Palestine?
No. This is just a manifestation. The Swedes are always very hostile. We have elections soon, so maybe things will change in Sweden. But the Swedes and the Irish are always very hostile.
But what do you mean?
Look, the Swedes have this fantasy that they are the people who will tell everybody who's right and who's wrong. And we look at them and say, who the hell are you all? Actually, we use stronger language than this.
He's not wrong.
To ourselves. Okay? They're being ridiculous. And they have these perceptions that is...
I never heard that.
Okay. What do you think, guys?
Some of the things he says is quite it's right. Yeah, we like to tell the world that we are better than them. And we are most of the time. Swedes are better than them also. So it's not so no, but I saw this one and it's like the Barbara Spector thing. But also if you go back in history, I remember when I read about the USS Liberty, and I was like, okay, so you let them kill and bomb and shoot your own ship that was there to help them and still you support them. It was like, can they do anything wrong in the eyes of the West? And now we have this one and the Swedish Democrats, and everyone is like, yeah, but we will help them because it's a democracy, blah, blah, blah. I don't understand this. It's.
I think the most interesting thing is that it says, my revenge is Malmö. So,
Did he do that?
Exactly. Yeah. Is he behind the problems in Malmö? Because it's a weird thing to say.
Yes.
I mean, if he would say something like, what makes me feel good is what's happening in Malmö. But that's not what he says. He says, my revenge. And then it sounds, you know, then you have Barbara Spector again, like, Jews are going to be leading the multicultural, whatever she called it.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting. And sometimes you get these clips, you know, when they speak, because it's quite clear that he speaks to a Jewish crowd. It was not meant for us.
Barbara Spector, that clip. That was Israeli public television or something like that, I think.
But then the laugh, I laugh a little bit also in that case, because, I mean, those who are worst, I have heard this, those who are worst, who have the worst time in Malmö are the Jews. The Jews cannot go out, and their synagogue is attacked, and it's not Swedes doing it, it's the Arabs. So his revenge is on the Jews in Malmö.
There have been a lot of Jews who moved from Malmö to Israel.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, and this is the main difference, because we can't move to Israel.
They have a backup country, we don't. Right?
Have you tried?
I'm quite sure that they wouldn't let me in.
No, but it's yes, they do want, in many regards, many of the Zionists in Israel want Jews to return. And although, of course, there's the functions like a Barbara Spector, but I mean, look, Barbara Spector's husband Philip Spector. He's the head rabbi in Stockholm. Boris Spector has received awards from the Swedish king on occasion. These are just not kind of nobodies. They jet set between Stockholm and Tel Aviv, essentially, and they go there and do these, like, operations to encourage open borders, migration, put pressure on politicians, have them in their pockets. And this sounds like another guy who's, like, either he's linked to that, connected to it, or has some other kind of way that he's worked to produce Malmö. So on one hand, then it's like a kind of a passive aggressive revenge for Swedes. Then obviously, I think he's lying when he says the Palestine issue, right? This is the same thing with Ireland. You had politicians in Israel that said Ireland, since they recognize Palestinian, must take in all the people, Palestinians from Gaza, when we bomb them because they're supportive of them as a state. So they want that, like, revenge, but then at the same time that can, you know, kind of fulfill that, what do you call it, the religious endeavor, right, of bringing the majority of Jews that are from the diaspora back to or into Israel, essentially.
And yeah. we know that, I mean, and none of these things are you know, secrets. We know from one or another of the old military high officials in Israel that at least a part of their nuclear arsenal is targeted to Rome, Berlin, and Paris, Europe. They have it. So the Samson initiative, or the Samson solution that is to strike against all the enemies of Israel, it's not only the Arab state, it's also Europe.
Yeah.
And we know this, and of course the military in Europe knows this. Of course they know it. Of course the secret services knows it. Of course the US knows it. Of course, but I mean, you have heard the JFK was recorded saying that, well, we don't have, as it stands now, there is no way out of this. The Israel lobby is so strong, and they have so they have all the best cards, you know. So as it stands now, it's hard to do anything else. I'm not so sure that all the people in the military, all the people in the secret services, all the politicians everywhere are so happy about it. In many cases, maybe think, what should I do? Maybe I should do like JFK. Yeah, that worked out fine, didn't it?
It compromises them, where they this is just what you have to do if you want to get elected, and otherwise they spend their money on your opponents or whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, Don, you just put this in the dock there, right? How Sweden Democrats, after all of this, right? Because you constantly see this, and it was Rickard Jomshof, he was down in Jerusalem recently. Where was it here, right? To an anti-Semitic conference. You know, like they're okay. And as Don Shaftman said, well, they have elections with him. Maybe things will change, right? So the right wing, this is the same in Germany, it's the same in France, it's the same in Italy, I think. Many countries now, where, like, as you guys said before, the patriot, you know, kind of option here, the more slightly nationalistic option, is now intricately linked to Israel support. And this is what they've wanted. I think and as you said, Magnus, that for a lot of people that aren't engaged in politics, they keep up with these things on a day to day like we do. That might be hard for them to see. They see this on the news. Well, they're fighting the same problem we're doing. These are our guys. So to them, this makes sense without them recognizing, well, who are the disproportionately people involved in lobbying for open borders. In the case of Sweden, we can go back to, I've mentioned it many times, but David Schwartz, for example, the early debate articles in Sweden in the 1960s and 70s about the case to open Sweden's border, we have to help refugees or whatever. So yes, we have plenty of Swedish activists on the left that are also doing this, but the main kind of moral framing or altering our moral perspective was, again, disproportionately from this same group, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I can recommend our friend Jonas Nilsson's documentary, Why is Sweden Multicultural? It's available in English on Odyssey and on other platforms, if you want to learn about the background about Sweden becoming multicultural.
Yes. But yeah, here they are giving 9 million. So after all that, now they're supporting the organizations that's making Sweden more multicultural. It is totally insane, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, it's and it's such a disappointment. Of course, Sweden Democrats has been pro-Israel and Zionist for a long time. So in that case. It's not that, you know, shocking. But it's like some of the people in the Sweden Democrats are right now doubling down on it, you know, to do even more to show how much they love Israel and the Jewish minority in Sweden. And it's, you know, it's embarrassing, I would say. They should be some sort of Swedish nationalists and focus on that. But they have given a lot of money to Jewish nationalist organizations and no money to Swedish nationalist organizations.
It's incredible. Here's the other one, guys. Israel decides to establish formal ties. They were so proud when this happened, right? A trio of European far-right parties. It was Sweden Democrats, France's National Rally, and Spain's Vox Party. I was disappointed by that. I thought that'd be better, but nope.
Yeah, but as I said, I mean, these parties show what they are made of, and they show that they are part of this whole system. And that's how it is, and it's up to us to handle that and understand that and think about how are we working for our cause, our things, our ideas in this. And one thing that I see is I see that there is a lot of, maybe most of all of the, you know, when people are writing on X or whatever, everyone is writing about these big political happenings. You know, that where it's Israel, it's Gaza, it's Russia, and it's everything like this. This is the main thing. You know, everyone is a geopolitical expert. Everyone. Very seldom I read about what these people are doing in their hometown.
Yes.
In their hometown, to make sure that their own people in this little rural town in Sweden or the US or Great Britain or France, that their local community is healthy, having a better, you know, future. What are they doing at home? No, they are sitting talking about, you know, you sit in a two-room apartment in Brumella and you're writing about Israel is and Gaza and Putin and Donald Trump and they will save or kill or whatever. And then they just go to bed and they go to work. And they pass by a lot of people and they see some young guy sitting there talking and they don't say hi because we don't say hi or whatever, you know. And then they go home and, oh, no, geopolitical analysis. And, oh, Putin is the best. No, Trump is the best. No, everyone is. And then they are all these crazy, you know, crazy conspiracy theorists waking up everywhere, knowing everything about anything. And the earth is flat and the moon is round, but we have never been there, so nobody knows. And, you know, and all these things. And nobody's like, yeah, I go and talk to this guy sitting on the bench here, my kinfolk. I don't talk to them. And this makes me a little bit frustrated, Henrik, I must say.
I agree. Yes. No, you're right. 100%, you're absolutely right. I think that's a great point, and the focus needs to be much more local, and it is a circus. I mean, I think they're still valid, you know, pointing these things out. There's a maybe an advantage and helping some people up with it. It's, you know, busy news cycles, but in a way, it's also a circus and a sideshow. And largely, there's things at this stage people have no meaningful power to do anything about more than whine on it and complain on it. If you instead spend some of your time, you know, trying to improve things in your local community, building a network, helping people to get together, building institutions and associations like you guys are doing, we would be much better off. And we have to kind of start from the bottom up. A lot of people look at this from the top and the top layer, but the reality is this will be a bottom. You will never be able to vote the right guy in that's going to fix this for us or something like that. That's just, you know, fantasy. I know a lot of people don't have that generally that are on our side, obviously, but you're right, there's a lot of focus there, and I think we could do much better laying some of those bricks and foundations now for something that will hopefully over time grow much stronger, and we got to have institutions in place. We have to have associations. We have to have networks. We have to have community. Know people. Get to know your people in your area. And this is hard. It's hard for a lot of people. That's hard to do, you know?
But the thing is, I mean, I remember the age before internet and the nationalist movement, and I think all the old guys listening in the U.S. also and everywhere remember this. We had this little problem, you know, that everyone wanted to be a leader. Everyone wanted to be a leader. We had, you know, so many organizations, and as soon as we had, if it was a little bit too big, then two people were like, "Now I'm the leader." "No, I'm the leader," and then it split it up. And this is how it has been, and I mean, this is how politics works also. And the thing is that with the internet now and everything, everyone doesn't want to be a leader, but everyone want to be the one who knows everything about everything and thinks that I have, you know, I must tell to the world these ideas I have. And I understand that you want to do that. But, you know, I think I try to be humble. It's not my strong, it's not a strong part of me, but I try to be humble. And then I think that, okay, Henrik and Lana, they know people in the U.S. and they have a quite good, you know, reach, and they follow the news there. So I listen to them, and I listen to Jared, and I listen to others in the U.S. and a couple of people, you know, who they say who they are. I can see their faces, you know. They have an outreach, they have live shows, and they argue, and they have these kinds of things. But they are not masked, and they are not, you know, they are not anonymous. So I listen to them, and then I listen to other guys, the same kind of guys, who have, you know, who stand out from the crowd. And the crowd is like, okay, I don't listen that much to the crowd, actually, I don't, because. I think it's a problem that anyone with you have these strange followings, and this is the problem. We had a problem with everyone wanting to be a leader, and now everyone want to be an expert on all these things. And so I circle back to the fact that choose wisely among those who seem to have quite a balanced view on these things. Weigh the information against each other and work in your community. I mean, that's the only way forward. Maybe listen more, work harder, and skip 2 days a week on.
Yeah, exactly. Partition your time, right? You like, yeah. do that thing which you do, but then a few days, as you said, out of the week, you make sure you focus locally or something like that. Yeah, I agree. A very, very good idea. I think there's a much more greater desire, need, and impetus to start, you know, doing more. And granted, we also seeing more. You're seeing more active clubs. You're seeing more associations. More people getting organized and getting together. And I'm very encouraged by that. And I think it's generally heading in the right direction. But it might not be as fast and as soon as we would like it to be. But anyway, I did want to cover a little bit on Germany too. Because I know you know quite a bit about that, Dawn, too. You have at least lived part of your time in Germany. And you had this interesting thing. Remember, it was the summer hit last year at Ausländer Raus and all this stuff. There was let me bring back some memories. Let's play a little bit of this, shall we? All right, there it is. Classic.
I want to party when I see this.
It was good times. Yeah, no, but it was kind of funny. Angela Plume here said, remember them. The case against them has been thrown out. Public prosecutors say they were covered by freedom of expression. Is that true, Dawn? Have you followed this?
It is true. Regarding the song and the words, foreigners out, Germany for the Germans, has been considered freedom of expression, so it's not illegal. There's one guy who's doing an old salute, and he is still getting into problems for that, because that is a hate crime. But the song or the lyrics are apparently not illegal, which is interesting, because I have been, you mentioned, I lived in Germany for more than 10 years. I have a German wife, so I also have, you know, family in Germany, and I'm there very often. But I have been to many demonstrations in Germany where we were not allowed to use the parole, Germany for the Germans, foreigners out. This is usually handed to you before the demonstration. The police say, okay, these slogans are forbidden, so you cannot use them. So there were always ways to get around that. We were screaming like criminal foreigners out and also the rest. That was legal.
That was
but
legal.
Now apparently they have decided that you are allowed to say foreigners out, maybe we'll see that in demonstrations as well. This is very interesting because Germany, what I hated about living in Germany is that it was impossible to know what was illegal and what was not. I was in contact with my lawyer and, you know, before publishing articles and stuff like that, you know, okay, can we say this? And he was like, hard to know. Publish it and we will see.
We'll see what happens.
it makes it really complicated to be a nationalist in Germany.
Just like they wanted to be.
Yeah, probably. Because you use some self-censorship so you're not crossing the line.
Interesting. All right, so freedom of expression. I think Dries made a good comment here to Dries von Langenhove. He said they may not get an official punishment. Well, maybe the guy who threw a Roman there, but their lives are ruined either way, and millions of young Germans will self-censor because of the terror that's spread by the media over this incident. Even if you would be, or if I would be miraculously acquitted on the 16th of May, 7 years of terror inflicted by the Justice Department and media have taken an enormous toll on me. Of course, he's fighting a legal case against the Belgian government, essentially, as far as I understand it. My family and literally every nationalist in the country, millions of Flemish people think that every message or joke they want to make, I shouldn't send that, or I may end up like Dries von der Langenhove or maybe some of those German people. Self-censorship is the biggest and worst form of censorship. That's the main objective. So even if I'm glad these people avoided jail, it's not something to be celebrated. Thoughts?
I must say that I think that in essence, yes, maybe he's right, but also this is the beginning of the end. I'm very hopeful. This is the beginning of the end of this system, of these, you know, if you go back to the Soviet Union, you can follow the Soviet Union, the state, and the jokes and how people, you know, did how people resisted by telling jokes, by being more and more and more daring in these things, you know. So what we see now, if you look at the TikTok and look at all these medias that I don't look so much on because it gives me a headache, what I see is, also in Germany and Europe, I see young people. I see young people, in many times young women, who have had enough. Who have had enough, and they do these things. And some get sentenced, and some get thrown into jail, and some have problems. But it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. I mean, if you look at it, if you take up this, it's everywhere. And you got these translations of Adolf Hitler speak, and you know it was like millions and millions looking at these things, and all these things. It's just exploding. It's the beginning of the end. I'm very very. I'm very, very positive to these things and the AI and the songs and everything that is happening, you know. So I don't think that people are self-censoring. And knowing how young people are, I've been young. I mean, self-censorship, come on. Maybe when you get a little bit older and you have all these things, you know, to think about. But young people, no, they're not so self-censoring. And I don't think they will be. On the contrary. So, I don't agree with that this is some kind of, that will happen. I don't know what you think, guys.
Yeah, I think you're right that younger people seem to care. They give no fucks, as you'd say, for the most part, anyway. And at least those who are politically aware, they're having a fun time with some of this stuff. We'll talk about a story later that shows some of that. Getting into what was her name again? Hendricks. We'll talk about that. It's kind of funny, but trolling and stuff like that. But there's a necessity to that, and we'll get to that soon here. But let's talk a little bit more about Germany. The AfD is officially declared a right-wing group. I think the wording they used was definitely right-wing extremist, which I guess they are seeking than to pave the way for a possible ban of the party. All party members are now subject to mass... I thought they already were, by the way, under mass surveillance of their phone calls, emails, messages, everything. This is obviously not surprising, but what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this has been step by step. So you have the first step is that you're called a suspected right-wing extremist organization, and then you become a... What was the word?
Definitely a right-wing extremist. Yeah. So now it's been confirmed.
Yeah. I guess. And they already had the local or the regional party in Thuringia and in Saxony, so in the former East, they were already confirmed or definitive right-wing extremists, but now the whole party is classified as that. And this is the last strike from the interior minister, Nancy Faeser. You know, on Monday, she will not be the interior minister anymore.
Good.
Because they are, you know, there's a new government.
Changing government, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the last thing she did. And there's a lot of criticism from, not only from the right. So because these kind of big decisions should not be made when you're only acting minister, because they're between governments. But of course, this was her plan all along, because this creates also a lot of problems for Alternative for Germany. The situation in Germany is very interesting, because you have this big divide between East and West. And like my wife's family, they are from the former East. And that's also where I have lived. So I understand the people there very, very well. And now Alternative for Germany, I mean, in the latest polls, they are the biggest party in all of Germany, but they are the biggest party in the East with a big margin.
Huge margin. Yeah.
Yeah. And, so first you have this firewall. They say, we will not speak to them. And now you're looking into maybe banning the party. And then you have the East Germans who already feel that they are not a part of this this federation, the German Federation. They feel like when the so-called reunification, they were on the losing end. And they feel like second-class citizens already. And now they have a party they vote for, which is the biggest party in the East, and the West is then telling them, well, we want to forbid that party, or this party is bad, we will not speak to them. I think this division will be even deeper between East and West, and it's very, very dangerous, not only for Germany, but also for Europe, because Western Europe has driven Hungary to the East, to Russia, you know, instead of them wanting to be a part of Europe, they are looking east. And I think this is what you will see in East Germany as well. And I believe in a strong Europe, and, you know, the European nations working together in different ways. And this divide between East and West is very dangerous for all of Europe in the future. And this is, the fault is on West Germany and Brussels and Western Europe, who don't really understand that the former Eastern nations have a different history than the Western nations in Europe, and therefore they look differently on things like, you know, LGBT and immigration and identity and so on. Because they have not been under liberal, whatever, democracy or whatever you want to call it, for such a long time as the West. So what's happening in Germany now, if they are, I don't think they will ban Alternative for Germany, but just that, you know, they're talking about it, and that you see this kind of classification, it will make the country even more divided.
Yeah.
And that's quite scary.
Yeah, it says East, you know, Russia pivot, right, that you see. And I think it was even AfD, I don't think they joined the quote-unquote victory march, but they had done some posts where they were, you know, supportive of this, and they wanted to join that and all these things, right? So you do...
Yeah, not just that. I mean, AfD, when it comes to geopolitics and so on, I think they have lost the ball completely. And, you know, they because the Russian ambassador, whatever, was not invited to some kind of Independence Day or Liberation Day, whatever it's called, when the Soviets and the Red Army pillaged Germany and raped and murdered.
Yep.
And then AfD Saxony goes out and protests against this and, you know, talk about the brothership on the Elbe, you know, where the American and the Red Army military met and shook hands. And, you know, this, like, this was a liberation of Germany. And this kind of anti-German speech should not come from a nationalist party. And so, I mean, I'm not a very big fan of Alternative for Germany for many reasons.
Yeah, same here.
But I think it's very the game that the West is playing here, or the Bundesrepublik, the Federation, is dangerous.
Are they kind of
there's a lot of frustration in the East.
Is that kind of what's not forcing them, but that's like they feel then that they have a friend to the East, as opposed, you know, because you'd have that divide more prominently featured, I guess, that then you can kind of pivot and join with them instead or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and Russia has been really proactive. You know, I lived in Germany from 2009 to 2022, and I've been involved in German politics and also on a European level. And in the beginning of the 2010s, you know, the invitation started to come from Russia. And I know that AfD went there a lot, to a lot of meetings. And when all of the West was, you know, rejecting you, and maybe you couldn't even have a bank account and so on, Russia was proactively working to show, you know, hey, you have a friend in the East. I think now they are reaping what they sow.
Do you think go on.
No, but and we can see this in many movements, and AfD is one of them. And I mean for Russia it makes total sense, because they want a divided Europe, and they want a weak Europe, because it's of course better for Russia. It has also always been in the interest of the United States to have a weak Europe. So we have always been, you know, between West and East, between these two powers. So we were in the middle. I mean, Germany was split in half between the Western and Eastern powers.
Yep,
yeah. And so a nationalist party in Germany, which would be not pro-European Union, but pro-European, you know, for a strong European cooperation, would be, you know, would not be seen positively from Russia, and also not from the United States. So I think they have actively been working on putting AfD and other organizations on this track.
I think what we know now, more or less know, is that Russia have for a long time they began with coming closer to different kind of nationalist parties and organizations, also the environmentalist groups, different kind of environmentalist groups. We know that they have been supporting and so on 10, 15, 20 years, and also, of course, the left. So they have had, quite a diverse front line, and looking to where will they have the best, the best response. And during the Soviet Union time, the left wing, the communists in Sweden and Germany, everywhere, they had their peace movement, and they had their different kind of organizations who were more or less megaphones for the Soviet Union. And they were marching around talking about peace and the big bad USA and you know, all these things. And that time it was the communist parties who were loyal to Moscow. What we have seen now is that when Russia tried, pushed on, looked at the nationalists or so-called nationalists or different kind of nationalists, and the environmentalist groups and the left-wing groups, what happened, it seems that the left, after... I remember the left wing when it became like globalists. It was so strange, this thing happening. We had these demonstrations, you know, attack globalization from below and so on. And then just one day I woke up and it was like the left wing is now globalists.
Yeah.
It was, what happened?
They switched, flipped.
Yeah, they switched. So the left wing went on being, you know, pro-EU, pro-everything like this. And the environmentalists got their 15 minutes in the limelight and more of that. So left was the nationalists who in many cases looked to the East. And now we see this kind of peace movement. Oh, I just want peace. And what they are doing is they are spreading the Russian narrative, helping to undermine Sweden and undermine Europe in different ways. So this is very problematic, I think. And this is something that has to be talked about, and it has to be stopped in some sense, because we can't have it like this, because Europe must come together and must be a strong force standing on their own.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of good in a way, right, that that separation seems to be happening, at least from like the White House official, you know, policy. There's seeking more to, I mean, ironically, you could have your, you know, critiques of it, right, in the sense that it's like, you know, Trump kind of disconnects more. This is over spats over, obviously, funding for the Ukraine war. It's over spats regarding Greenland. It's over spats regarding the tariff trade war stuff, right? But it's this faulty position, as I think Trump mentioned that, right, that the EU was created to keep America weak. That was hilarious, though, by the way. But it's the opposite, right, federalizing Europe and actually turning into kind of a strong enough to kind of stand up to do their bidding of sorts. And you can go back, you know, the history there is far, right, in terms of, like, initial funding of the Marshall Plan. You have, obviously, NATO coming in, stay behind armies. The excuse then was, we're going to defeat communism, we see, so we're going to help you guys. And then what happened, as Magnus said it, through the back door, as America was infiltrated with cultural Marxist ideas or whatnot, that's kind of on the back end that liberalized the U.S. and, you know, in the extension then Europe, although they were, you obviously had a strong left wing, but... You know, with the USAID stuff, the Doge exposed, for example, it was interesting to see that, like, here you have the U.S. funding, like, gay pride parades in Kosovo and, like, you know, drag queen theaters in Albania and shit. Like, it's the most crazy stuff. So I'm glad that that's being exposed and removed. The problem I see in one end is, of course, as the European leaders get angry, right, with America, as we saw Ursula von der Leyen and many of the other ones, right? They're kind of doing exactly what Trump wanted them to do. By then stepping in, I'm not saying don't support Ukraine, because obviously we should, but it is interesting that it's a conflict that largely has been initially, right, I'm thinking back to like not only 2004, but even before then, of like the Orange Revolution. You had like the Boris Berezovskis engaging in trying to kind of, you know, do coups in Ukraine and stuff like that. So it's not just like a 2014-20 or even 2022 problem. This goes back decades of foreign interest trying to use Ukraine, and then this, you know, devastating war as a consequence of it. So again, I try to be balanced on it, but I see international foreign meddling in these nations, and then it's kind of like the baton is kind of handed over to Europe. Here you go to war now, right? You saw those promotion propaganda posters out of Germany that shows the little boy, basically. He's like barely 18. Are you, you know, half face with a military helmet? Are you ready to go to war to defend Germany? So it's that, Magnus, that you said before, almost like a fake nationalism. Now it's okay again, right? You can be a patriot now, but go to war and join, you know, slaughter your European people in the meat grinder that we have arranged. I don't know. It's very sinister to me.
I think this fake nationalism can meta-politically or meta-cultural, it can be good, because it fosters another kind of thinking, you know, this more militarized, patriotic, even if it's fake, you know. It fosters the youth in a different way than what has been the last 40 or 50 years in Western Europe, which has been, you know, pacifist, liberal, and so on. And I think the true nationalists have a possibility here to influence young people, you know, that will be more open to our ideas.
It's an interesting way of looking at it.
Me and Magnus are very optimistic, and we try to often be that. But I
hope you're right.
It helps us sleep better.
Yeah.
But I also believe it's true. And if you look at the old nationalist movements from 100 years ago, you know, the soldier life was that was the highest standard. You know, there was the every man should live that life, you know, and the mind of the soldier and the soul of the soldier was something to strive for. I think it's a good thing if more people do like their military service and so on.
I agree with you. I just don't want it to be for the wrong reasons, but I'll do that. And same thing with like a strong, of course Europe needs strong armies, you know, that's absolutely, it should be strong, independent, all those kinds of things. I'm just afraid of that, like just now into the meat grinder, you know, kind of into the, but when we're like almost at our weakest, right? To a certain extent. Magnus, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, the thing is that when we look at it, I mean, this idea, the soldier is a soldier. If you look at it in a historical sense, or you look at it in the sense of, I mean, the Viking chieftains, they had no ideology. They had no... I mean, the soldier is doing the things he's doing either because, well, it's quite fun. You have an adventurous spirit. Maybe it's not so many women back home. So, yeah, I follow this red beard guy. We go out and we do these things. We kill some other guys and we, you know, plunder some things. And we do all these things. This is what we have been doing for millennia. And now, lately, we say that all the soldiers must understand and have an ideology. I just want white people, white young people, learn to fight. I want them to learn to march straight. I want them to handle close combat. I want them to be able to shoot and feel like, wow, this is fun, shooting these things. I want them to learn to operate in the forests and in the fields in Sweden. I want them to salute the Swedish flag. I want them to do all these things. I don't really care if they are politicians in that sense. If you read Ernst Jünger, you know, the soldier is a soldier, is a soldier. The officers are officers. When you ask an officer in the Prussian army, every nationalist is like, oh, the Prussian armies were so cool and so good. And they didn't give a flying fuck who was the leader of the country. They were doing their duty as men, as soldiers, as this mythical figure. And this is what we need, because when we have these people, when we have 1 million or 2 million Swedes in arms and Europe in arms, understanding that there is something to fight for, there's something to die for, and there's something to kill for, then you have a totally different mindset from what you have today. So I hope that that young guy on that cover, I hope that he goes to the army, and I hope that he becomes a soldier, and I hope that all these, you know, things awaken, and he says that, yeah, the finest thing to do is die for my country. I really hope that, because then we have a chance. If we continue like now, and people are like, no, I don't want to fight for anything. If the enemy comes, I don't want to fight. Then if they are not, do you think these people will fight for political uprising? I mean, if you look at the political uprisings, who was in the front line when Europe fought back against the communists in the beginning of the 20th century? Who was in the front lines? The old soldiers from World War I. They were on the front lines. We don't have them.
Right.
So we need them. And look at the Azov, and look at all of these fighters in Ukraine. When this war is over, when it's over, what will happen? We have a lot of good people who stand there and say, okay, what shall we do now then?
Hopefully they take their government back. That's what I want them to do.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. You know, yeah. I am very positive concerning these things, because we cannot just look at, you know, today or tomorrow or yesterday. We must look in millennia. Look at the Roman armies. Look at what's his name, Don? This German guy, Tacitus. No, not Tacitus.
Arminius.
Arminius. He went over
German
and fought.
Guy. Thank you for that.
I mean, he went that over German. To Rome. He fought for the Romans. He was there, you know, doing all these things, fighting against his own people, and then he came back and what? Yeah, he liberated them.
Yes,
that's the world. That's, you know,
that's true.
We need those kind of people.
Mm-hmm. No, I hope you're right. I hope there's a silver lining in it.
Yes, it is. I'm right.
And I'm also, because anyway, we that's a huge topic, but it's interesting. I hope you're right that there is a silver lining in it, and that they're just not slaughtered for other interests. That's all I'm saying. But if they can be used or like stand up for their nation and for their folk at the end of the day, absolutely, I'm with you. Net positive.
Henrik. I must just say that.
Yeah.
When Soviet Union attacked Finland, it was a liberal government in Finland.
Yeah.
It was a liberal government in Finland. Should the Swedish National Socialist in the 20s said, no, it's a liberal government in Finland. Let the Soviets take them. No, they said, let's go and fight for our brothers in Finland.
Yeah.
And the Finnish patriots were like, yeah, now we're going to fight Soviet. They weren't like, yeah, it's a liberal government here in Helsinki. I don't want to fight for the liberal government. Let the Soviets take our country. I mean, what kind of idea is that?
Yeah.
And this is why I get so frustrated with the idea, because we have been fighting for our homeland, for our soil, for our rivers, for our mountains, for millennia.
And for our folk.
I don't care if the chieftain is this or that. It's my country.
Yeah.
And now people are like, no, I'm not going to fight for that. No, because it's the wrong government. First, we got to change the government and have my government. Just my, the one that I love. And if it's wrong in any sense, I won't fight for them. And this is what I hear on X and everywhere. And it's like, what? What is happening with these people?
Yeah, it's a good point. Cocktail Zone here says, great show yesterday and today as well. Hope things are well on your end. Thanks again for what you do. Thank you, Cocktail Zone. I appreciate that. And I do want to talk before we wrap up here a little bit about Silo Hendrix. But real quick, we had what might be another terrorist attack in Germany. At least 8 hurt after car drives into crowd in the German city of Stuttgart. Don, I think you put in a story there too, where the headline seems to have changed. What do we know so far?
And as you can see on the headline now is that a woman is dead now. She died in the hospital, 46-year-old woman. And I think the police say they rule out a terrorist attack. They say it's an accident. Of course, we don't know, but it could be. But it's always interesting with these headlines about these cars driving into people.
A car
never
attacked
the crowd. A gun killed people in... You never say that. But a gun shot people in Stockholm today. No? But you say a car drew into... So it's always so weird with all this. But maybe it's a self-driving cars. But it looks like it's not an attack, but some kind of accident.
But maybe it wouldn't be that. We question it for good reason because of historical track record. Because we have one every other week now in Germany. It was one not too long ago, back to back. And again, comes in the wake of, again, plenty of criticism about the AfD, obviously. But again, here you have a nominally kind of more slightly nationalistic party who's obviously partially are pointing out problems with migration and these kinds of things that are then seeking to be banned as they highlight the issue that we cannot live like this, essentially. Remarkable.
I mean, it was hard on Alternative for Germany, but it's also true that when it comes to immigration and so on, they have some of their leaders have, you know, been really on point. It's not like they are all bad in every question.
Sure. Yeah.
Especially in the East, like in Thuringia and Saxony and so on.
Yeah.
And today that is the way that the Germans are channeling their frustration.
Exactly. The frustrations are legitimate, and for now, that's the only kind of place where they can put it, right? In the AfD, for good or for bad.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Interesting. So we'll follow up on that and see if there's something. Now, I do want to before we let you guys go here, because I know it's late over there, and I appreciate your time again.
No, it's not late. It's early. It's
getting early. That's right.
No that's problem. Right. And I've been waiting for this subject. It's very interesting.
Okay. So here we go. Silo Hendrix. Protect her, James Goddard says there on X. Non-whites are making out that she murdered someone. All she did was protect her child like any mother. Good to see the community come together and raising funds so that she can get her family to safety. Cry harder, Africans, he says. So here's the video. Let's watch entertainment here.
The child? Did you call the child the nigger word? It is my own business. You call him a nigger? Okay, why don't you have the boss to say it right now again?
Fuck you, nigger.
Okay.
Nigger, nigger, nigger.
All right, that's what you say.
You're going digging through people's shit, you dumb fuck.
Nobody digging through your shit.
A little fucking kid just did, you dumb
ass. That little kid, you call him a nigger?
Yeah.
The little child?
What, if he acts like one, he's gonna...
Are you about to hit him? You chase him here?
He took my son's stuff.
So that gives you the right to call the child, 5-year-old, a nigger, the N-word?
If that's what he's going to act
That's like. What you're going to call him?
That's what he's going to
You know, that's a hate speech. And you can be recorded for that.
I don't give a shit. Fuck off.
Okay, we'll see about that, what the internet has to say about you. Call him a nigger.
All right, there we go. Most
famous. Why did it say nigger 10 times and then he said the N-word? Like, okay.
But this is, I mean, this is. I like this. because it's liberating to see in many senses.
Is it not?
Yes, it's actually very, very liberating. And the thing is that, once again, I'm going to quote my favorite pastor, Pastor Bob Miles. And he said that when the men don't do their duty, after a while, the women will step in. And when the women step in, when our women, I'm Germanic, I'm from the north. And if you go back to Tacitus, and if you go back in our history, we have always seen our women as the fierce warriors they can be. We have seen them as companions. We have never seen them as some kind of, you know, lower human beings.
Like a weak prop that
like
just needs to obey all the time.
Weak.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why someone like Andrew Tate is, you know, probably some of the worst kind of people when Nordic Germanic people listen to that kind of shit. And this manosphere, what do you call it, you know, this manly man shit about a very, very skewed view upon women.
As I said, Magnus, they're bringing their desert mindset to the context of European and specifically North European society. But go ahead.
Because in our culture, when the man wasn't at home, then the woman had the sword. We have a lot of stories from our Germanic homelands where women had to step up and fight, and they had to protect their children, and they had to, you know, do the things that, yeah, we are companions in love. We are companions in starvation and in war and everywhere. That's the way we do it. I don't know how others do it. I don't care, because we are right and they are wrong. And our women are magnificent when they are like this. And yeah, she says words I wouldn't probably say, because I don't say that. And she, I mean, she's a modern, the tattoos and everything. I really don't appreciate that in that sense, but I'm in love with her. I mean, I mean, she's wonderful. I mean, she's beautiful and she's so angry. And I mean, because she is the face of the awakened, I won't say Saxon, the awakened, you know, white women who have had enough. And if more of her caliber stands up, then the men will like, oh shit, now I have to do something, because our women are quite cool, you know. And this is the beginning of the end also of this society, when our women, Kathy Ainsworth, we have had so many in the US, you have so many if you read your nationalist history, all the men who stood by the order, all the women who stood by the order, the women who fought in the different nationalist organizations. You have so many. And we have it also here and during the wartime and everything. If we have this, if we get this back, if we start treating our women as the fierce warriors they can be, and you know, then things will happen. This is beautiful. Yes. Thank you.
So she raised, she's raised about, I think, over $100,000 right now, which is funny because it comes in the wake of this Carmelo Anthony, you know, stabbing and all that stuff, right? Where they backed up, you know, his guy for stabbing a white boy in the heart at a track and track meet, basically, and that was totally fine, you know, justified. Here's again a woman says the bad word, and it's, and it, as you say, Magnus, it's not about the word itself. It's about the fact that she gives no fucks. She's fed up.
Yeah.
She's gonna put her foot down, and she's just done with it, right? So, and it's an important, and it's not because it's about, again, us running around and you know, saying, you know, nigger here and there all the time. I mean, that's not what it's about. But it's about the fact that getting to a point where words no longer confines you or restricts you, or that you're afraid that somehow this can be held against you. So it's just the liberating aspect of throwing that off as the shackle, right? That's restricting you. And that's why some of the tweeters here were pretty good ones from Daniel Concannon, for example. What you're witnessing isn't a fundraiser. You're witnessing white guilt begin to die. And I think that's true. You know what I mean? It's not about the word, and it's not about, like, you know, the interaction, but just the fact that, like, she's like, all right, I'm done. I give no shit about what anyone thinks
and
of me.
And the response, you know.
And the response, the exactly.
Yeah, yes. That's because then you can see the true metapolitical effects it has. And it sends a clear signal to other white people, you know, that we stand behind you. Don't be afraid to speak out.
Yes.
We will. You know,
we got your back.
This kind of racial solidarity, you know, when people see that, more people will stand up, and then we will become a true powerful force.
Yeah, but also, I mean, how cool isn't she? You know, she does things that many men would.
You want to leave your email for her somewhere?
Yeah, she can have my email. Yeah, of course. No, but I mean, she does things that so many men doesn't do. She stands her ground. I have seen men and women, of course, but it's always a little bit special when women do these things. When they, like, you know, she's standing there with her child, and it's like, yeah, I don't care, and it's, she's protecting. How she's protecting her family, her kin, you know, and I mean, this is the most powerful thing I think about this, and circling back to my people, my race, the Nordic Germanic people, they were feared, partially because our women were ready to fight and die for the family. They weren't sitting back, looking on, letting men do all things. They were in the fray, you know, and seeing this, it evokes some kind of ancestral memory. Actually, it does, of the fair white Nordic peoples fighting back, saying no, and I think this will make a lot of good people feel the same thing that I'm feeling, and like, okay, now we double down. I mean, if she can do it, come on, guys. If she can do it, she has a little baby in her arms. If she can say no, fuck this, I'm done, then you who sit at home can do it. You can rise up and like, okay, I do like her. I do. I say no.
Holy shit, she's raised $406,000. Goal is a million. Why not? Why not?
Yeah, go, give her 10 million. I don't care. It's not about the money. It's about the give her 10 million. I don't care.
No, but again, it's an important act of, like, yeah, exactly, saying that, like, regardless of, you know, how, oh, like, it's a bad way. Yeah, who gives a shit, right? But at the end of the day, like, yeah, having the back of someone who just is done, right? Finished, no more. Like, I don't care. I don't give a shit about any of this. Yeah. It's quite interesting to watch, actually, and see the as a gauge, like a temperature gauge on where we are at currently. You know what I mean? it's quite funny. Anyway, some good memes out there too already coming out. Obviously, a little Burger King boy. That was a good one. I like that one. Yeah. The other one I saw, this one was pretty good too.
Come on! Yes! Come on! So they did it in this, everybody likes this, what is it, the Japanese style that
Gimli.
Studio Ghibli. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Studio Ghibli. They did it. Very nice. So I think this will explode, of course, on the internet. So let's help it explode, and let's just say that, yeah, she was right. She did nothing wrong.
I don't know if anybody knows her personally. I think somebody's in contact with her because they just said she also has people around her, because I think she can also become the target of left-wing people and blacks and so on now. So,
well, yeah, obviously, right? Exactly. No, exactly. This will be... You have one individual, and, you know, with the ascendancy of the cell phone camera, right? Like one individual interaction, which previously would have been a small thing and it would have been over with and no one would have, you know, known and moved on, can now become like a flashpoint or a symbolic, symbolic node of a much bigger racial problem, essentially. And now it becomes about this individual. And yeah, she better, you know, watch your back and never relax and all the rest of it, because she's in parts of Minnesota, of course, is totally overrun with non-European populations, and she's in Minnesota. So yeah.
But that also, I mean, for the white guys out there, I mean, you have a lot of them in the U.S. You have a lot of cool organizations, people marching down the streets and everything. You have the right to defend yourself. You have the right to keep and bear arms. I mean, it's just get in touch with her and say, okay, we here we are, 10 guys coming over. We're going to stay there until everything is fine, you know. I mean, it's quite easy to handle that. It's no problem. So now she has done this. Then it's up to the guys. Muster the strength and build your little army and go there. I mean, what's the problem? Just do it. God damn it.
I agree. Cockfree Zone here said again, yeah, I did see this one in passing. He said, well, I will be donating to Silo. Speaking of calling out the joggers, have you seen this base Chinese lady calling them out? I thought this was in Japan for some reason, but no, I think it's China. Let's listen to this one.
Go back to your country.
Black
people should go. Go back to Africa. You look so much ugly with some dark skin color.
This is so weird. The old Axis is alive.
I'm so torn right now. I don't know
which side am I on. You have to pick a side, Don.
The old Axis is alive. No, but I think that we will see a lot more of, and I mean, look at it. We will see a lot more women saying enough is enough, and that's good for many reasons. Maybe we shouldn't have to be there, but we are. And I mean, look at it. You have Meloni in Italy. You can think whatever you want about the politics and so on. Of course, in Sweden, we have some very, very outspoken women with X accounts, you know, who have 10,000-15,000 followers and so on and so forth. I mean, this is natural that it happens now because things are going as they are. And then, as Pastor Miles said, when the men don't do what they should do, the women will come forward in many senses in doing it. I mean, look at our organization. Some of our most driven people are elderly women, you know, and they're
Boomer Waffen.
Yeah, and they're totally, you know, they don't give a flying F about anything. No. You know, they're 60 plus years old, 50s.
Yeah, what do they got to lose, right?
No, I mean, and it's wonderful to see. So, yeah, we're doing it as we always have up in the north.
Very good. All right. So with that, let's do some plugs, gentlemen, here before we let you go and wrap up the show here. Let me see. Oh, that was the Russia story there, too. We had the Folkish Insight. That's your project, Magnus. Tell us about Folkish Insight.
It's my English version of my... I'm so bad at doing talking about my own projects. I write a lot, you know?
where I publish maybe bi-weekly or so, something in English, usually about Swedish or European politics. So you can follow that if that's your cup of tea. Otherwise, we are both on X and Telegram. So it's a good way to follow our work. Most is in Swedish, but I've heard that these modern things called computers can translate stuff. So.
Yeah.
Did we lose you, Henrik?
I think he's talking.
Oh, there we go. Sorry. Yes, we were actually accidentally muted. It's what I was hearing some noise outside, so I muted to figure out what the hell is going on. So let me do. I think it's fine. You never know. But anyway, the freesweden.se. Obviously, that's for all the Swedish audiences out there. Check out the organization and everything. So I do apologize, Magnus, but one more time, take. Talk about Folkish Inside real quick.
Oh, no.
It's my
well, it's no. Well, that's my English Substack. Yeah, that's what it is. I write, and some things go there.
Very good. And
if you want to read it, do it. I don't know, you know.
Don, your Substack as well. You have a Substack, right?
Yes, english.donerikson.com, and also follow us both on X and Telegram. Most stuff on social media is in Swedish, but as I said, there are modern tools to translate, but we also post in English also. So keep in touch with us there, and if anybody wants to come to Sweden and see our project, visit our house, come to any of our big events or the small events, use our contact form on the homepage and write us or write us on social media. We are, you know, now on our national day on the 6th of June, we have a big celebration. Then we will have guests from Ireland, from Poland, from Serbia, Denmark, Germany, a lot of other Europeans coming as well. And the 6th of June, and then the 2nd of August, we have our big summer festival. So if anything of that fits with your travel plans and you want to come to Sweden, we have sleeping accommodations and everything. Just let us know a few weeks ahead and we will arrange everything for you.
Very, very nice. Awesome, gentlemen. Thank you for both coming on. I appreciate you. Dawn, Magnus, we appreciate your work, so please keep it up. We'll stay in touch and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank you for having us.
Yep. Get some sleep over there. We'll see you guys later.
Good night.
All right. Night. Awesome. Thank you, boys. All right. There we go. We got some noise outside, so I better go check what that is. But before we wrap up, I do want to give a little bit of a plug here, obviously. We got our executive producers and producers to say thank you to here for today before we wrap up. So let's take care of that. T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap. We have Jake, Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeeves, President Obunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom. We got the Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, Rex Ballington, Commie Combo Deal. We have the Dearborn Toxic Event, Brendan Anthony, Penelope 7 USA, Bertrand Compere, Dixie Drone Force. We got Arctic Wolf. Thank you, Albert. As always, Europe Awake. And we also have Teutonic Werebear. Thank you, guys. We appreciate our executive producers. We also have our producers, Mr. Walker 696, Johansson, Leroy Demand, Snark Pop, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Yuri New, Obadiah Hexwill, Perfect Brute, Single Action Army, Lord H.P. Lovecraft, Trevor Der Schwabe, Sonata for a Violin, Whitewater Rafting Fan, Jetfire, ExposedFlyers.com. We got Shane B., Restitutor Orbis, Alcyon, and the Boo Man. That's very loud right there. I got to go check out what that is all about. All right. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. If you want to get one of those tiers, you can do it at RedIceMembers.com or Subscribestar. Obviously, if you do want to sign up for a membership, you can do that as well. At RedIceMembers.com, Subscribestar, and Locals. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate your time today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you to everyone who super chatted. We will be back with Western Warrior. Until then, everyone, stay good, stay safe, keep fighting, and we will see you in just a few days. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for watching. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for our exclusive members content. Don't miss our latest shows, interviews, and other videos only for subscribers. You can also become a member by signing up at subscribestar.com/redice. Get full access and help support our work. See you on the other side.